Well, there are a lot of housing types, but there is one housing type that has nothing to do with aesthetics or architecture or anything. It just has to do with chronology, history, time, the passage of time. And pretty much cars, I think 50 years or no, 20 years makes a car a antique. I think it's safe to say that basically a century makes a home antique. So if your home is more than 100 years old, you can really safely say that it's an antique. And as I see it, there really are only two types of antiques. Those that actually are functional and people are happy because they're doing maintenance, and those that are clearly in dire need of maintenance. And what both of those homes are for the people that own them are passions. They're either passionately in love with them and like the idea that this is a great thing and I'm going to spend a huge portion of my daily life thinking about it, looking over my shoulder like an ancient relative of yours that doesn't move out, that it's maybe a leak, maybe a break, maybe and hear a creak, oh, is that a crack? All that kind of forensic stuff that goes in your brain and drives you crazy. Well, that's going to be an older home. And there are those that don't really love it and really begin to hate it and want to get rid of it and want to move away and want to move into a new home. And we're here in front of an incredibly beautiful 18th century I would call it a salt box-ish sort of house that Lee Whiteman from Guilford, the best real estate agent I know in Guilford, Connecticut, knows intimately well. And Lee, why don't you tell us here, Bruce and I, why you think there's a ever-present allure of the antique, especially here in New England?
Well, it's like finding a gem. When someone is mining and they find a gem, you can't create that anywhere else. There's lots of replication, but when we go inside, we'll show you some of the pieces that are important to people. It's the stone that you go back and say, this foundation or this chimney was built by someone. And very often we can go back into the records and find out who did it. And there's the chamfered beams, which you will love, Duo, when we go inside, that because they weren't doing crown molding, this house, the original part was built in 1700. They didn't have molding. They had to just shape the beam that held up the rest of the house. And so for those people who really appreciate things that are unique and things that are real, this gives them something that is just irreplaceable.
And I would say that just like an antique car, people that are sensitive to the sort of chi or karma of the antique cannot find it in a reproduction. Even if you take old stuff and recycle it and stick it in there, the fact that nothing is plumb level or square in this house, the fact that all the wood used is actually wood that you can't ethically harvest now, first generation ancient wood, it's really kind of a magic event. So let's go inside and let's meet the owners.
Okay, if we go here to the left, this is the original 1700s part. One of the other ways to know that this is old is this is the part that doesn't have a basement. This is the section that you have to belly crawl to get underneath.
Oh, my God.
And the rest of the house does have a basement.
And look at these little nubbies here that support the joists. Look at how tight the growth rings are on that white oak. Oh, and here's the owner. Here's the owner. Hi, I'm Duo.
Hi, Scott Walkers. How are you?
Well, could you just give us a clue as to your legacy with this house, when you found it, how you found it, and what you've done with it, and how you like living in it?
Well, we lived in a 1740 house up in Massachusetts and just fell in love with the idea of an old home and the history and the sense of all of the people who have come before it. And when we saw this and Lee showed it to us, we wanted it immediately. The great thing about this house is as you walk through it, you go from generation to generation and get a sense of all that's come before it. It's just fabulous. And this room actually had a lot of preaching done in it in the 1700s. One of the local pastors was here, and this was called the Great Room because they had enough space to be able to open up and have some religious services and some other stuff. So it's fascinating.
It's really twice the size of a normal antique home's room, and you can see the gigantic beam down the middle that's had these incredibly, Lee called them chamfered. Calling that chamfered, Lee, is actually it's actually sculpted to make the bottom edge beautifully. It's called a cima recta curve that you see in cove moldings all the time. It's absolutely phenomenal. One huge piece of wood that actually comes across and bears right on top of a window because from the outside, They wanted it to look perfect and symmetrical. And they put the load right where there wasn't any structure. That's really hilarious.
Is that what's referred to as a summer beam?
This is a summer beam, yeah.
Actually, that is a summer beam. And it's actually from boat building technology, because you would raise the beam up as high as you could because there was such little headroom in these boats that it made you have passage. And this is not a true summer beam, because the true summer beam is actually wider than it is deep. And this is deeper than it is wide. But it's still pretty good. I mean, it's locked right up against the framing. And you'd see, I think half of this wood looks to me to be, what is this? Good grief. I can't even tell. Maybe some of it's oak. Some of it's pine. It's all pine. But a lot of these homes, the one big distinguishing factor is that you've got much broader boards than you can ever possibly buy today unless you resaw a barn up. And you often find poplar in these floors. But these are beautiful. Beautiful, knotty pine floors. Could you maybe give us a tour through the back and tell us about these additions?
Go this way.
Well, this is the best way to go, because as you walk in here, you go directly from 1700 over to 1720. As you can see, the fireplace would have been outside there, and there was a staircase here, which was removed, and then this was added in 1720. And I love this room because it's got just such a feel. It's like an antique, real farmhousey feel with the wood and how the beams are encased. This is the original fireplace. And there you've got a big drop down into the next room, which is the lean-to, which was 1750.
That's fantastic.
Now, we're looking at the third fireplace, because you do have that massive center chimney fireplace. And one of the great things about the way technology has moved along, and Duo, you can fill in the blanks for what I know, is that when it was about 25, 30 years ago, they invented power venters, we were able to reclaim flues, because in old houses, people would take one of the flues and let that be where the furnace went. Took it over. And what a pity. You would come in and go, oh, you can't use that one because that's for the heating system. Well, now you can reclaim them, and that's a real treat.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right, but the thing that gets the houses now, if they've been renovated, are safer than they've ever been, because there are many of these older homes where they would have multiple flues going into one opening, and they were incredibly dangerous. And now pretty much, you know, if you've had a beautifully renovated, these have all been obviously heavily renovated. They all have separate flues. They all have separate smoke chambers. They all have separate, if they meet federal energy codes, they have separate outside air that comes in to feed the fire, so they become maximally efficient. I mean, these homes were often built with no insulation. They were leaky as sieves, and really all the heat you got was really from radiant heat, very little convective heat. And the houses were sized so that everybody could sit within radiant heating distance. So you'd actually be warmed directly by the fire, not by the air, because there was no insulation, and the windows were rattling around. But let's take a quick look at this light-filled rear addition. This is fantastic. And I think there are other people back here.
Yeah. Oh, wow. And now we've entered the 21st century.
Yeah. This is the 2006 kitchen. So you kind of make the circle from 1700 right out to the present day.
Now, the other thing, as we left the other room, that people are concerned about with buying old homes and living in old homes is insulation. And you can insulate a property a couple of different ways. One is to remove the walls on the inside. The other thing is to remove the clapboarding and insulate that way. So we don't have the problems that we used to have with having to wear sweaters, wear hats inside. They can be very, very comfortable.
I can tell you from personal experience, Liz Lee knows for whereof she speaks, because she lives in one of these ancient old homes that is somewhat leaky sometimes and somewhat tight other
Getting
times.
Better all the time.
That's right.
Well, we actually have some walls that have no insulation. So there's parts of the house that have not really been brought up and are really cold. And they tend to suck the heat out of the rest of the house. So it's...
Close those doors.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful in this particular space because you can really catch the vestige of the old house. But you get these new skylights that have been brought in so that as the houses grow out from the core, what ends up happening is the center can be quite dark. And the more peripheral light you can get, the better. But I really do want to thank you, both you and Scott, because this has been really an incredibly wonderful adventure into the past and into the mindset of how you can have so much history around you at the same time live a life of extreme immediacy, including is that young lad 3 years old, 2 years old?
3 years old.
Oh, 3 years old. That is so great. But this is what houses are about, families, and how the values of a family are conveyed in a home. And there's nothing more beautiful than being in a home that's had generation upon generation upon generation of families, making it come alive and be the central focus of their lives.
Duo Dickinson is an architect, author, and the contributing writer in home design for Money Magazine. And Lee Whiteman is his favorite realtor in Guilford, Connecticut.